All right, you're back in the DFSR. It's an NBA podcast. It's Wednesday. It's January 16th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
Oh, well, you know we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, and we'll go through all that salesy stuff near the end of the podcast. Just so you know, we do have a good deal for podcast listeners only, so stick around to the end, and we'll walk you through all the stuff we have offered on our site. But there's no time for that right now, because we got to get into basketball.
All right, wow.
On it. did I wet your whistle with things that will be coming later, but in terms of overall tools and whatnot, or are you just ready to go and talk about basketball here?
I'm not sure that's exactly how wet your whistle is meant to be used, but I am ready to talk about basketball.
Well, let's just stop here and look up real quick what your whistle is, because
have a little taste of something that gets me in the mood for something else, right? But it's not really used. It's not really used like from you. I don't think you can wet my whistle. I'm not sure.
Oh no! Yeah, you wet your appetite. Shoot. Okay. Yeah, wetting your whistle. Don't touch
my whistle. All right. My whistle is for me to wet and me to wet alone.
Okay. Well, if you're still around, we're going to talk about 8-game slate of NBA action. It's a little bit smaller for a Wednesday. Usually, I've been noticing the schedule seems to be evening out. We had been doing this thing where Tuesdays had been very light in the NBA, but those seem to be expanding a little bit. And then Wednesdays, not as big at points. And 8 games on a Wednesday is really not all that much. And we got a lot of slow defensive teams to work our way through. But we'll go game by game, kind of talk about the injury issues, talk about some of the plays that do stand out on this slate. Because there is plenty to talk about. And then we're going to end up spending a lot of time talking about Harden, too. But because we go time stamped on these games, that's going to be about the... Oh, no, that's both at 8 o'clock. That'll be the second game. The first one is Orlando and Detroit. Detroit's a 3.5-point favorite against Orlando. Not really too exciting teams, mostly because the fantasy production on both is centered around three guys, and that'd be Blake, Griffin, and then on the other side, Vucevic. Blake and Drummond, and then Vucevic. Drummond's a guy, though, man, if you squint, you might be able to see him as something of a value play, which would be weird on a slate that has guys like Harden, Giannis, and Curry, and all these other guys. But I don't know, at 9,500 on FanDuel, I have him at 35 minutes. This is a good matchup. Vucevic is not a good defender. Can you talk yourself into maybe something on the Pistons side here?
Yeah, the funny thing with Drummond and the Pistons in general is basically the whole contest comes down to figuring out how many minutes they're going to play. And that's true for most teams. But in the case of Drummond, like, he can play 24 minutes or 40 minutes. And you have to just try to hit those games where it's more likely than not that you'll probably split the difference, right? And so when he's out of foul trouble, when the game is close, he'll play 34 to 35 minutes. I think that is the plan against Orlando, in spite of the fact that the last time they met, he was only out there for 24 minutes. So he did go 14 and 15 in those 24 minutes, though. So I wouldn't worry about the performance. It's really just a minutes question for me.
8,700 on DraftKings is really kind of, it's not daring you to play him, but that's when you get him sub 9,000, because if there's going to be a minute that he hits, or game where he hits 36 or 37 minutes, then he could easily crush this price, especially with the double-double bonuses and all that other stuff. So the 8,700, we have him at 35 minutes right now. If we ticked up to 36, he'd be in all top lineups. Again, I'm not sure, on a slate like this one, I'm not sure I feel totally comfortable having him be the high-floor guy you'd want to roll in cash, just because... No. Like we said, he's got a 25-minute game in him, especially if he gets
foul trouble. Well, Vooch got him in foul trouble last time they met. That's exactly what happened. They just kept pounding the ball down low. He got into foul trouble. Vooch went on to have, 22 points, something like that, and he couldn't stay on the court. So it is in play. But it's still a reasonable play and definitely an excellent big tournament play.
And then we try to sometimes struggle on the minutes on a guy like Vooch because Orlando can play in some blots where they get blown out, obviously. We've seen 31 to 32 minutes out of him. He did get up to 35 against the Rockets last game. He and Gordon both played 35 minutes, and Fournier played 37. In a game that's supposed to stay close, could we go something like max minutes on some of those guys? Because he's one that could possibly fall into the conversation, is what I'm talking about, Vucevic. Gordon possibly too, and maybe even DJ Augustine. Could we go, and mostly Augustine just as a cheap play at a weaker point guard position. Is there anything to be seen here, or is this really not the team that you want to go 34, 35 minutes on at least their key core group of guys?
Yeah, I mean, I've hated this team for as long as we've been doing DFS, it seems like. Right now, Gordon is on an upswing, 5 straight games where he's played 34 minutes or more. And generally, the plan seems to be to play Gordon that number of minutes. If there's something resembling safety, I think it's him at a $7,500 price tag. It's just that the rest of these guys, like I said, they'll just really come and go on you. I think, it's funny, if you just compare his game log to, say, Vucevic's, Vooch has 35 minutes in his last game, but then 30, 30, 24, 32, 27, 26, right? So are you going to rely on that at 9,200? Absolutely not in the same stretch. So, but then you could be like, it's game script, whatever. In the same stretch, Gordon played, again, no fewer than 34 minutes. So he's the one guy that I think the Magic really know is a part of the plan on a night-to-night basis. Maybe Fournier, again, if you kind of squint. But Fournier played 36 minutes against Utah and had 3 fantasy points. So I don't know if that's where you want to land either.
All right, that's the lone 7 o'clock game, which actually sometimes does put us in a weird spot when it comes to lineup creation and just, you know, because when lineups lock, because we get a lone 7 o'clock game and then we have a full hour to wait till a group of 8 o'clock games and then a few games on the West Coast that start around 10 o'clock. But anytime you just get that, anytime you get the schedule makes it so that you have one less hour at least to just hear about some injury issues, that can be somewhat problematic. It won't be problematic on DraftKings because you can just late swap all these guys in, but on FanDuel we've seen more than once where that hour can cause you problems. But anyway, 8 o'clock games. I will just start off with Houston. Brooklyn goes in and plays the Rockets.
Yeah.
The Harden thing is at this point just, I'm getting blasted with a video here as I'm walking in the background. The Harden thing is, I don't even know. I was just couldn't even find new ways to write about it. Like it's just when you think you've seen the peak. He goes out against Memphis, plays 34 minutes, drops 57 points and 9 rebounds on them, and the game was out of hand. They didn't even need to get him to the typical 40 that he'd kind of been running if the games stay close. And now we get to a price point where maybe peak Russ when he was doing just on that triple-double tear, 13,000 on DraftKings, 14,000 on FanDuel. Part of me thinks that like it's just so impossible to fade him at this point and just find the savings elsewhere. And we're just in new territory when it comes to what players can sustain on these price points. Well, and then I'm going to get into some of the Rockets personnel concerns as well here. But I mean, when you see 14,000 on Harden, by the way, almost a 5 points per hour multiplier, which is like in our system, completely ridiculous that this would even be in question. What are your thoughts on Harden, fade or not, maybe in cash on this slate?
Well, I think you have to say that the floor is at least reasonable. You know, this is hard. This is like, you know, when they say people can only visualize numbers up to a certain number and then it's all sort of the same. My DFS brain is so calibrated to like 60 fantasy points being basically the peak of what anyone can average. And even Harden this season, averaging about 58 fantasy points a game. To get to 5x points per dollar on FanDuel, you need to score 70 fantasy points on 14,000. And is there or has there ever been someone who you could reliably look at and say, yeah, tonight he'll go out and get 70? Like that's the base, like that's the average of what we can expect from him tonight.
Right.
There hasn't been in the time that we've done this. That being said, in five of his last 8 contests, he's done exactly that. He's top 70 fantasy points. So is this the new normal? Is he just like really going for these records, like scoring 35 points a game? You know, maybe just trying to average a triple-double for the rest of the season. Who knows? So I think it's in play that he's a good option at 14,000. I wouldn't be devastated to not have him in the lineup, though. I mean, Brooklyn's a great matchup, and, you know, all those qualifications aside, but it's extremely difficult to have upside on 14,000 is what I'll say. Upside on 14,000 would look like 84 fantasy points, and that's, I don't think, realistic to expect from him more than a handful of times throughout the season.
Yeah, I mean, this is a weird one because we've had to continue to reset, like, or recalibrate the projection on him in terms of the usage, because right now I have a pretty big usage bump on his full season stats, just because, and we still only, and I'm putting only in quotes here, only have him projected for 29 shots. Now, that is not really what he's been taking. He's taken in his last, 33 shots, 30. By the way, this doesn't even include the trips to the line. So in his field goal attempts, 33, 32, 24, 30, 18, 35, 32. And then the trips to the line, 18, 16, 11, 11, 15. Like, the guy, the usage rate is just complete and utter bananas right now. And so I'm worried that we might even still be a little low. And like, and the run that he's on, he's just been able to sustain. So basically this run started on, I would say, I'm gonna sort of pick a number, a game out of a hat, but this seems like the one. It was back on December 13th versus the Lakers, and in that point, at this point it's been 17 games. In those 17 games, he's averaging 40.3 points, per game. Seems good. 43 points per game, 10 assists, 7 rebounds, and he's also throwing in 2 steals per game. Like, he's actually just at least getting feisty in the defensive end where he's getting 2 steals each time. Like, these numbers are just completely and utterly sick. So then this kind of goes into the next thing, which is, and the Rockets just don't have anyone else left. Like, they're playing with a complete skeleton crew here. Capella's going to be out for 2 months. Obviously, Chris Paul's been out for a while. Eric Gordon is still out. That's most of the starting lineup is gone. Then, even like the auxiliary guys, like Daniel House, who'd been playing pretty big, you know, mid-30s minutes for them, they couldn't agree on a contract. He's headed back down to the G League. They're going to bring some other wing up. It's unclear who that is. And now they're just left with guys. Like, if you look at the game logs of these, you would think that the game logs of these other guys would really start sustaining some other fantasy performances, but they're not. Like, guys like Gerald Green is kind of fine. Austin Rivers doesn't do a whole hell of a lot. Nene came in and started and was awful. It's usually this kind of stuff opens up stuff for the rest of the guys, but that doesn't even seem to be the case, because the more guys get hurt, the more Harden does. Does that make sense? Like, I'm just mostly like flabbergasted by just what an insane run this is. But what do you see? Do you see possible value on some of these other Rockets guys, because they are still unbelievably still coming cheap, even though the team's been playing with nobody for the last 2 months?
Mean, my first thought is that they ought to be coming cheap, because I've never scrolled. Like, we were talking about this morning. I was traveling yesterday, and you were kind of catching me up on some of the stuff from this slate. And I was like, ooh, a little Nene? Okay. No. He played only a few minutes. He was terrible.
Yeah.
What about, Marcus? No, not Marcus Chris either. Did Hartenstein get it? Oh, he did, but he's awful. So it's just like a sea of guys who played like 6 to 15 minutes who were simply terrible. I still think like PJ Tucker is going to be a playable option who can disappear on you from time to time. You know, Gerald Green, the price has come up, but in terms of just like, we're now in the part in the movie where it's literally just like, these are the last two guys left on the team, and it's just people that they pulled out of the audience and stuff like that. He's still a credible basketball player and did score 14 points against Memphis when the rest of the team was just doing nothing at all. So I think it's, some playable options, like I said, but I'm definitely looking forward to the "here are the guys the Rockets have active tonight" tweet later on, because right now it's not even obvious. Oh, Austin Rivers. I don't know if you mentioned him too, but Rivers is just...
Yeah, he played a lot of minutes, but he doesn't do a whole hell of a lot.
But he's on 5,000 on FanDuel. I mean, he's got 28 fantasy points last game, 32 against Orlando. Bad against Cleveland, kind of middling for a few games, good against Golden State. I don't know. He's at least out there, I guess. Like, we're naming people on the Rockets, right? And I don't know how Rivers is not the second or third best fantasy option for them right now.
I am comfortable giving guys like, I think my guess is that either Ennis or Green start tonight. Maybe we see Ennis come back into the starting lineup. I think 35 minutes out of Gerald Green is reasonable, just based on his production and his ability to kind of get his own shot at least a little bit. So of all the guys, I'd feel comfortable playing Green. If Gary Clark got back into the starting lineup, he'd be a guy that'd be interesting to me at small forward. I think he could play 30 minutes. Again, none of these guys are dynamic fantasy options, but the minutes at this point just could win out for the Rockets. On the Brooklyn side, Shabazz Napier sat last game. He's questionable to play. We got a huge performance out of D'Angelo Russell last time around, which was like one of his... I don't know how you do this when you see Brooklyn guys come on slates where you've kind of had the minutes audit, but I've been burned too many times on the last game. D'Angelo Russell played 34 minutes. That must be the new plan for the Nets. And it's like, nah, we just have full season's worth of data that suggests this is not the thing. And he was still a really kind of heavily owned guy last time, which I was shocked about, just because we've just seen the minutes come and go. Is there a time where they start trusting some of these Nets guys? They are going to get RHA back, I think, tonight. And like I said, right now, Shabazz Napier is currently questionable.
Yeah, so Russell's a funny one, because I've actually made the case for him. I think I wrote him up exactly one time this season, and that was after the Memphis game, where he had back-to-back 35-minute games, and he played 33 minutes against Memphis, and he was solid. I actually do think the plan is to play Russell. Like, basically, ever since he came back from that brief injury, he went out there, and he's been playing in close games 33-plus minutes. Now, the problem with the Nets, as always, is that close games are not... They're far from a sure thing, right? Because he played 23 minutes in that Boston game on the 7th when they got blown out by 21 points, but then played 37 minutes against them in the last game, right? So when the game stays close, when they lose by, say, less than 15, Russell tends to play 30-plus minutes. I think he's... I think that's pretty much the plan, and I think you can rely on it. The better question is, even if he is in there for 34 minutes, is he an $8,000 fantasy player? And that is something I actually struggle with. So I think the combined risk of the blowout risk, which is always in play with the Nets, it seems like, in spite of their improved record this season, plus the fact that Russell is at an all-time high price point for them too. I'd rather not for cash games.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there. And then one final note on Harden, at least for our system's purposes right now, sees the $13,000 on DraftKings as reasonable and willing to do it, and then the $14,000 on FanDuel is where we start to actually push the bounds of realistic projections. And like I said, if we feel like even like we're a little bit low, still a little bit low on his overall usage, that could change as we get into lock. All right, let's go through some of these other games because there's plenty more to talk about. Milwaukee goes in as 5.5-point favorites against the Grizzlies. Giannis, they are coming on the back-to-back, though. Giannis was not asked to really do all that much last night. Where do we stand with a guy like him? Because it seems like they're almost daring you to play him at like in the 11,000 range. He's kind of gone the opposite way, where we've talked many times. The plan for the Bucks for him in close games is to play him something like 35, 36, 37 minutes. But they get involved in so many blowouts. You know, they blew out Miami yesterday. He played 25 minutes. They blew out the Hawks the game before. He played 31 minutes. Do we feel comfortable? This game rates to stay close. Grizzlies are a slow matchup. Could we just go like $3,000 less? I mean, I can't even believe I'm saying this. $3,000 less on Giannis and just maybe play him as the high floor option if we thought about fading Harden.
Yeah, you know, Giannis, another guy where the minutes are a question for me. And that's, I'm always tentative. I don't know. It's weird to recalibrate my mind to think that I'm getting a deal on anyone who's 11-5, but I guess Giannis sort of passes for that right now. If you think he plays 36 to 39 minutes, he's definitely a threat to punch this in on any given night. Memphis is still one of the worst possible matchups. So, you know, just from a pace and a defensive efficiency standpoint, I think right now, yeah, slowest pace in the entire NBA and the sixth best defensive efficiency. That's right. Going to round them out to being basically the worst or the second worst matchup, right? So I guess I'd have to come in and see where the line is. I guess I could go back and see what our system projects the line to be. I don't have that open right now. Nonetheless, I think you're definitely still taking on some amount of risk in your life here. So that's my feeling there. And I don't know if it's more or less than some of these other games, but yeah, I wouldn't walk into this with a full head of steam or anything.
The right now the line is 5.5 from Milwaukee on the road. We have it something like 10. We have them easily covering the 5.5, and that's just been the story for them this season, right? They just blow a lot of teams out. It's like, you know, if you look at he had, like I said, he had a run of three games where the game stayed close, and then there was, you know, two or three, four, five games before that where the games got completely out of hand. The thing is, Milwaukee is just a really good team, and they really take it to these lesser teams in a way that sometimes good teams just don't do. Like, they, you know, the Warriors will do this all as well. So they'll just, like, the bad teams, you don't get to hang around, right? Like, you just, the game's right. Going to be over by the fourth quarter. Some of that has to do with rotation and personnel. Some of that has to do with the way they're coached. But, yeah, that's my only concern. And like I said, on Giannis, you just are getting, at least on FanDuel, you're just getting such a major, you're getting a $2,500 discount or $2,500 less for Harden to him. And I think that's at least enough to make me want to consider. On the Memphis side, I'm really not interested. Milwaukee is also a very good defensive team. Memphis really isn't just sustaining anybody from a fantasy perspective. I guess the one interesting thing is if Marc Gasol is questionable with a hand injury, he hit his hand on a dunk, and it was clear like that he went to the locker room. I was watching this game. It was clear the hand was really bothering. He was doing like that shaking move, like where you just like something's wrong with your hand and you just can't get it to stop doing it, and the shot looked all off. So it'd be interesting to see if they just kind of hold him out a game. And if they did, that would actually probably open some stuff up for the bigs here. But we'll have to wait and see how that goes. I'm not really interested in anything else on the Memphis side. In a good game, you know, the good game to tune into, I'm not sure where it's going to land for us from a fantasy perspective, but Toronto goes in and plays Boston. Boston is currently 1.5-point home favorites. Boston's just having a season that's all over the place. There's no over-under on this game, by the way, right now. It's just a 1.5 total for Boston. Celtics are they're a team that's very hard to get a handle on. They've had guys coming in and out of the lineup. Kyrie sat last game, and they lost to Brooklyn. They are on a three-game losing streak, even with Kyrie playing in two of those games. But their favorites here against the Raptors. Some of these guys are coming cheaper because the minutes have sort of been all over the place for both these teams. Is there anything you like in this game?
Yeah, well, so first of all, on the Boston thing, people shouldn't lose their minds about a three-game losing streak. On the season, Boston still has a better point differential than Toronto, yep, in spite of having a worse record. So, you know, and Toronto's had a ton of injuries, and, you know, I don't know what this says about either of these teams when they're at full strength, but, yeah, I just want to caution people against tearing their hair out about a 3-game losing streak in basketball just absolutely happens. Right now, our system, for what it's worth, projecting Boston to win by 1.5 points, almost exactly the same as the Vegas line. So, right. I feel comfortable with that. And that being said, here we are. We're back trying to talk about, first of all, I guess I'll start with Boston from a DFS perspective. Generally speaking, Boston tends to be a team that you can play the guys in great matchups and not play them in not so great matchups because mm-hmm. the pricing is somewhat efficient. As they get more and more healthy, you know, guys tend to fall off the radar. That being said, we are seeing right now a little bit of a bump in some of the bigs, Al Horford in particular. And I guess it all comes down to projecting the minutes. If you think he plays 30 plus minutes in a close matchup, I think he's probably too cheap. I think he settles in as something like a $7,000 player. It's just a question of what the real plan is for him, because, you know, and this is funny where, you know, it's almost back to the Gordon and Vooch conversation where each individual player has their own threshold for when they lose their minutes, right? So, you know, the absolute Iron Man, you know, Anthony Davis, LeBron types, they tend not to lose minutes in games that are like on the verge of close, you know, those 10 points in the fourth quarter type games. And then there are guys like Horford who are the first guys pulled if the game seems somewhat out of hand either way. So right. I don't know that you can trust it necessarily, but there is a scenario where he and say like Marcus Morris or something like that wind up being a value here.
Toronto has allowed above average rebounding to opposing centers this season, which makes sense because they're just undersized. Like they start Ibaka. I mean, that like kind of Ibaka Siakam mix at the power forward and center, especially with Valanciunas out. But they even with Valanciunas, he was really not starting. So they are considered to be undersized. Like they make up for it by being just so great on every switch and just so dynamic on the defensive end that they like one of the few teams that can get away with rolling a 6'9" guy at center for lots and lots of minutes. But it makes sense when you look at the, you know, where they are going to lose a little bit on that is the rebounding. So centers have rebounded like something like 4 to 5% more than league average. But then power forwards, this is where, you know, labels can get weird. Power forwards don't have nearly the advantage, although they're about league average and rebounding too. It's mostly the rebounding. Like they're still going to struggle to score against Toronto, but you can get to the glass. And I think that's where our system is picking up a little bit on guys like Morris and Horford, who again are still coming cheap. And Horford, he's the one. They've been working him back from injury, and I'm just at some point I think we're just going to see like the 32, 33 minute game out of him, and I wouldn't mind trying to be a day early on that, but I totally take your line of thinking on that it can be safe or can not be the safest approach. He's 6,400 on DraftKings, 6,400 on FanDuel, and I think that's where you're starting to push on like he's just very, very cheap on a slate where you might just want to get out, you might just want to find some middle tier value somewhere. Toronto side. Van Vliet is questionable right now. OG is going to sit. Not sure that opens up too many more minutes from any of the regular guys. The Van Vliet thing is interesting. Maybe we see more minutes out of a guy like DeLon Wright. Anything that you like on the Toronto side?
Yeah, not especially. Like Toronto, you know, they're another team that it just really comes and goes on for. And, you know, especially now with Lowry back in the mix, that kind of kills a lot of the value there for me. I don't know. Lowry's kind of interesting, actually. Like he played the full 49 minutes against Washington. He needed all 49 to get there in terms of value here, but we've certainly seen Lowry be an $8,000 player, and I think the price had been depressed on him basically because the widely accepted and probably accurate assumption was that they would ease him back in. But if the easing season is over, Lowry's price is going to climb 10% in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess we probably, for a guy like Lowry, we probably want to look. I'm thinking something like 35 minutes. I'm at 32 right now, which is
that's where he was. I mean, he had settled in around 35 minute rotations prior to the injury, and you know, it's always so hard to trust because, especially with one of these injuries where they like Toronto doesn't even seem to know what to do. Like he missed four games, came back against Philly, missed another 8 games, and then he came back against Indy but was playing low 30s minutes. It's really tough to know, but the fact that they were willing to pull that trigger against Washington and just leave him out there for, I think it was like 39 regulation minutes or something, shows me that either they haven't learned their lesson or they believe that this is a good plan. So yeah, 35 minutes seems reasonable to me.
And I will say too, these like Eastern Conference high profile matchups are the ones where if you're willing to go a little out of bounds on someone's minutes, these seem to be the ones to do it with, right? Like these are the teams that these are sort of like leverage wins when it comes down to the end of the season, especially if you're looking at playoff seeding and stuff. These are not the ones that the teams typically tend to take off.
Yeah.
We can keep moving here through the rest of these games. That was the 8 o'clock stretch. We do have an 8:30 game with the Spurs and Dallas. Dallas 1-point home favorites here against San Antonio. The news here for Dallas is they're shopping Dennis Smith Jr. He has not played the last few games, and it was just widely reported yesterday or the day before that they are entertaining trade offers for him. So I don't know if that means that he'll continue to sit, because sometimes when that's the case with the team, especially when they have maybe realized that like he's just not really part of the mix right now, especially with how good Doncic has been, and like that guy's clearly just the point guard of the future. Like there's no, doesn't seem like there's any question mark at all right now about what his role is going to be going forward. Does that sway you at all on any of these guys? Like he's questionable with an illness right now. The other day it was questionable with a back and he sat. Like they just kind of like, it seems like they're making things up. It really should be just questionable. We're trying to trade you and don't want to have you get hurt before we can send you to Phoenix or something like that. But, you know, where does that land you with some of these minutes? Jalen Brunson did play a lot of minutes off the bench, just sort of in that backup role. Does it move the needle for you at all on any of these other, any of these other Dallas guys? I guess Luka would be the one guy, but he's kind of had trouble sustaining, at least from a fantasy production standpoint, sustaining these prices.
What about Maxi Kleber, dude?
I wrote him up too. Yeah, we'll get him in a second.
DFS classic. Yep. I mean, he's the one, you know, oddly, and you know, this is probably a sign of intelligence from a lot of these teams that they're like, who cares that the guy going out is actually the point guard? Like, this guy can do point guard, and, you know, we'll exercise creativity and put Kleber in there. The price is up on him, too. We were playing him comfortably in that 4,000 range. We played him for three slates in a row, I guess, against Phoenix, Minnesota, and Golden State. And he was mostly effective at the 4,000. I mean, he was excellent at that price tag, and then he was solid the other two nights. The price has come up to $4,600 on him, so that represents a pretty sizable increase, you know, over $4,000. Are we still comfortable playing him? I mean, what's the real minutes plan? Is it 30
well? It's so plus funny minutes? About like it's so funny with a guy like Luka because right, like you know, Dennis Smith Jr. sits and you don't get Jalen Brunson starting. You get a power forward who starts in his place because the other guy just moves to point guard, right? So like it's
exactly
it is one of these interesting situations. I'm comfortable with Kleber. The only thing that makes me uncomfortable with Kleber is that his starting role and minutes legit came completely out of nowhere, right? Like he was not playing at all, and then one day just started and played 30 minutes a game, and has done that for three games in a row. That's the only reason I'm hesitant, because if for some reason you weren't playing at all, you can just go back to not playing at all. Now, I get he's been pretty good.
Okay, but no, he started for Matthews too in December when Matthews went down. Like this was the plan then as well, and he was playing 28, 29 minutes. So for whatever reason, they believe that if a guard goes down, they can shift Luka to basically playing
anywhere, really.
Like you said, roll. Yeah, exactly. Roles are very, you know, loosely defined on this team because they've got a lot of tweeners like Barnes and Luka, and you know, even Dennis Smith Jr. can play up sometimes. But yeah, so I think that they just see him as the replacement guard.
Like, or they just shifted everyone around. Like Matthews went from the three to the two, and Barnes went from the four to the three. Like, just like it's just that's right. Just the new NBA, right? This is the new thing where it's like, what's Danny Green play? Well, sometimes he's going to play power forward because, or you know, small forward, and maybe ranging all the way to power forward depending on you know what they want to really be doing. And then at times he's going to be the shooting guard as well. Like this, the new NBA, these positions are becoming more and more meaningless as guys like Doncic and guys like this can just do everything on the, like Giannis can just do everything on the court, right? He can defend the center and he can dribble the ball up and be the point guard as well. And when the more guys you get like this, but these guys we're only getting more of these guys. It's not going, you know, it's not going the other way. We're getting more of these hybrid, very difficult Ben Simmons kind of types, very difficult to define. Anyway, long story short is I'm fine playing Klee, right? He's in, I think, probably 100% of our lineups right now. The price has not moved enough on him. Yeah, $4,600 on FanDuel. That's still easily within range if you think he's going to be playing the 30 minutes, especially if Johnson's going to sit. The price has come up a little too much on DraftKings, so I don't think you're there. And again, not a great matchup here against the Spurs. And I guess we could talk about the Spurs here real quick. Is there anything? They sat, Rudy Gay. They're getting Rudy Gay back this game. And they had sat Bellinelli, and Bellinelli's questionable. It seems like they're getting a little healthier. That's really usually not the spot I want to be in with the Spurs. Yeah. I want them to have guys like Gay and Bellinelli out so we can play Forbes and Derek White and, you know, maybe more minutes out of DeRozan. I don't know if you agree with that sort of sentiment, but the more guys I see probable for the Spurs, the less inclined I am to play any of them.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I think as well, you're seeing some of the other playable options hit peak prices too, like Derek White and Aldridge in particular are at season high prices or very near to them. And that's not where I want to be with a guy who can also just chew up the random 20-shot game as well. Like, yeah, it just introduces a level of uncertainty that I'm not comfortable with.
Moving into the next game, we have Portland is going to host the Cavs. Right, this one right now, in terms of a Vegas projection, is the only game that we probably have to have considered to be significant blowout risk, with the Blazers 13-point home favorites against the Cleveland team. That's just horrible. There's no other way to put it. But dude, when we see the 13-point spread, because Cleveland's a team that we don't mind targeting guys against. But do you think that for guys like Lillard, I mean, I guess to some degree McCollum, do those 13 points put you, like, just have you too worried about a blowout risk on a slate that doesn't seem to have that really in any of the other games?
Yeah, I think the blowout is definitely probably enough for me here, especially as I'm just looking at lineups today. I think there's a decent amount of guys coming in our top cash game lineups that don't bring these safety question marks. And so, you know, I tend, like, basically I'm weighing the blowout proportionally to how big this slate is and how... So, like, when you think about blowout risk, you want to think about it not in a vacuum, but in comparison to your other options, right? And so today, I'm seeing a lot of guys come in from games like, you know, even like the Golden State New Orleans game, right? That's a 7-point game right now, but with a 22 points higher spread. That's enough of a difference for me. And the rest of the games, I think that's the second highest spread on the slate, right? Yeah. And the next is like 5 after that. So this game really stands alone in that blowout category. So, you know, if there were, say, like a 3-game slate and 2 of the games had a 10-point or higher spread, then I wouldn't be concerned so much about it. But on a huge slate, 8-game slate, where the next highest is 7 and the next highest after that is 5, I'll do my best to avoid, you know, just randomly losing because I happen to have one of the guys from this game who isn't a part of the blowout, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's where I land as well. Now, you know, then you kind of need to ask yourself, if the Cavs can hang, do we get... We've seen Seti Osman go up to 40. He played over 40 minutes last game. Right. In games where they do stay close, he's versatile enough too. Like, you know, without Larry Nance, and it seemed like he got a lot of those power forward minutes last time around. That's why I think they've been feel comfortable playing him maybe a little bit more than some of these other guys. The bench guys, other than Clarkson, really don't tend to get there on a night-to-night basis. But would you feel comfortable with a Cavs approach, like taking Seti to 36 or 37 minutes here? The reason I ask is sometimes these are guys that will come into the discussion if the full minutes are there. And are we as worried about the blowout going the other way on the Cavs side of it? Like, will they, you know, do they stand to lose their minutes just as easily as the Blazers do on maybe on the winning side?
Yeah, the Cavs are one of these teams that's so bad that they have nothing to rest for right now, right? Because they're going to get blown out essentially every game. So I think they're going to be, you know, when we talk about the amount of, like, the threshold, rather, that a guy will be pulled from, I think the Cavs have a pretty tough threshold for needing to pull their starters. But that being said, even Seti's minutes recently, yeah, there was a bump last game. And you can still see plenty of games where he's just not out there for 35 minutes, right? Like 27 minutes and less. And he's one of these guys that just basically hits value on a $5,000 price tag. It's a war of attrition. You know, it's a rebound here, a random assist there because someone makes a 3 when they were supposed to pass. It's not really like he just goes out there and just takes over a game and, you know, just crushes the other team, right? So, yeah, I'm not very bullish on Seti at all tonight. I think that being said, I think there's enough guys... Like, if you dream up a scenario and you're trying to construct a story where this game stays close, there is a way you can play, say, maybe Seti and, I don't know, Alec Burks or something for Cleveland, and then you grab CJ McCollum, who's still the value, and if he plays his minutes, would be an excellent value, maybe Lillard coming the other way. I think that's kind of like an off-brand stack that you would get you. You'd be in a very, very small percentage of the field that will be trying something like that. But that's really my only interest in this game right now.
Yeah, I totally agree. I wrote up CJ as a possible value play. He's just so scoring dependent, and the minutes come and go in a way that they just don't for Lillard. I don't know if it's a rotations thing or they're just getting less comfortable running him big minutes. And so much of his scoring production comes from just having to put the ball in the basket, and that's what keeps the price in check. That kind of variant, because that's going to be a high variance approach to fantasy production if you just need the score and you don't do anything else. And that really is McCollum. I've looked this up, and he's like one of the highest percentages of actual points to fantasy points needing him to score. He's something like 70% of his production comes like that, and that's like with guys like Redick and Gerald Green. These are the other guys that are, they just have to hit threes basically, and if they're not doing that, then you're really going to be dusted on their price. All right, two more games to go. 10:30 or both 10:30 starts. 10:30 Eastern, at least. Jazz go in and play the Clippers. Jazz have just been decimated at the guard position with injuries. Rubio, Exum, and Nato are all out. They did move Donovan Mitchell to the starting point guard. That looks like that's going to continue to be their plan. They started Royce O'Neal, but he didn't really – he doesn't really do much. It's mostly – it's now just definitely Donovan Mitchell running the show here on offense. His price has come up, though, a little bit. Do we – you know, do we think we've fully accounted for Mitchell? This is a clear new role for him, right? He's always been a decent usage guy for this team, and they've always needed his scoring. But he's now taken 24 or more shots in each of the last five games. But the also, we saw the assist numbers, not last game, but he also had a 6, 9, and 7 assist game over the short term as well. And that basically coincides when Rubio went down and they started just losing all these point guards. Do we want to make any fundamental base adjustments to Mitchell's projection going forward, knowing that he just, like I said, he just is the point guard now?
Yeah, I actually did make a fundamental adjustment to his projection. I think going into the LA game, after we saw his role in Orlando, you know, I watched that game and just seeing that the on-court, off-court data wasn't going to be enough. Because it's one thing to be on the court when Rubio's not out there and, you know, kind of... But the team wasn't prepared for it, I guess is what I would say. Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of like just this, oh, I don't know, we're kind of playing pickup basketball thing. Now that the Jazz know that they have to be prepared for this, it's obvious that their answer is to have Mitchell play point guard. And that's going to mean all that on-court, off-court data is kind of useless. So I did give him a 10% bump to his assists. That, frankly, might be low. I mean, he's a guy that averaged 3.6 assists on the season. And in this new role, I'm too slow at math. It's been 6 assists, right? So that's actually more like a double the assists that he was getting. And that includes a 2-assist game against Detroit where you can argue that he ran pretty bad. So, yeah, I think you could double his assists. That's going to give him another 4.5 fantasy points a game, and that's going to make him something like a $9,000 player. Now, when he was basically unanimous chalk in those first few games that all the point guards were at, he was at like 8,000. So, you know, this is where DFS gets you, where you can weigh things accurately on one end, but if you don't account for the price change that happened in the meantime, then you can still be left out in the wind. So I'm not sure if that all that makes him a good play, but yes, I do think it's sound to adjust his underlying thing, but even based on the small sample size.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think we're very much on the same page there, and I didn't realize that you had bumped the assists, and I was on my way to do the same thing. And I gave him a little – I ticked it up just a little bit more, but not anything too out of bounds. The rest of these role players, I thought we'd see more of a usage bump and maybe just ball handling bump out of guys like Joe Ingles. That really hasn't materialized in a way that I thought it was going to. It just seems like the shots have gone more the Mitchell route. They did bring in Korver and played him a lot of minutes off the bench last game against the Pistons. He played 32 minutes. He shot great from 3, 5 for 11, but he's a guy, he's not going to do much else. I don't trust that he's a 30-minute per game guy off the bench either, but maybe, I don't know. Like, if they just see Mitchell as, you know, like you said before, that you're not getting no more point guard minutes are coming in off the bench. Like, they just need to bring in other guards. Crowder ran bad last game. I see him as maybe like a 30 to 31 minute upside guy. It's just the Jazz are just really short on guys. And then obviously Gobert is coming off some huge game, 18 points, 25 rebounds against the Jazz. Do you feel comfortable taking a guy like Gobert maybe to like 36, 37 minutes? The Clippers will start guys like Gortat and will go big at times. Do you think they see it where like the floor on Gobert's minutes are just high enough now that he can sustain some of these prices?
I think you give him the minutes for sure. I'm not sure that, again, gets him there on the pricing. So, again, Gobert was a guy, he was like, you saw the ownership increasing. I think he was like 7,400 in the first game that we played him, and now he's almost 10,000. So is he 33% better than he had been? I'm not sure about that. I think Gobert's role has changed even like a lot less than Mitchell's has changed. So I wouldn't be comfortable going in there and digging around with the underlying projection on Gobert, even in spite of this really excellent rebounding run. We've been doing DFS long enough to see that huge rebounding runs will come and go. Karl Anthony Towns had one earlier this season. I don't know if they're momentum based. I haven't actually like dug in, done a study on it or anything like that, but there's a good reason why basically no one averages 18 rebounds a game. And I think it would be irresponsible to project Gobert for those. And if he's more like a 13 rebound a game guy, which is what he's been over the course of the season, even if you account for the recent bump, then I don't think he's quite a $10,000 player. So I think it's like doable, and maybe it's not the worst thing in the world, but again, you're basically, if you look at these last games and you think, hey, Gobert has 25 rebound upside, well then 57 points, fantasy points rather, is his upside. And if your absolute max upside is 5.7x, then I just don't see a whole lot of room for you as a really good DFS play.
Yep, I agree, and I think in the end, if I were just to sum this up, in the end for me, the Jazz guys are good plays, and the price might have just come up just a little too much. We've just had a few too many games of them just being good in these new roles, and I think that might be sort of where we're left. All right, final game of the night, one to definitely tune in for. Pelicans go in and play the Warriors. 240 over under, easily the highest of the slate. Warriors 7-point favorites. Warriors are starting to maybe look like that team again that can just blow everyone out. They dropped 79 in the first half against the Denver team on the road, and a Denver team that's been very good on defense and just an excellent team all season. Had no problem with them. Did not have to press any of the starters into minutes. Draymond played 31. That was the most of any of the starters. Right now, when you run lineups for us on FanDuel, it kind of wants you just to stack at least the guards in Curry and Thompson against these Pelicans. Curry is at 10,000, Thompson's at 7,400, and then play like Giannis and really kind of maybe just fade Harden. That's close, and this is like it's probably going to end up changing, but the sentiment remains that our system's seeing these guys as good value plays. Is this the kind of game that we take the Warriors guys to 36, 37 minutes? Because that is the plan when games are close, and if that's the case, then maybe we are just getting guys like Curry, Thompson, possibly even Durant at something of value here on this slate.
Yeah, this is the game. The Warriors are the team that I'll adjust their minutes the most on a game-by-game basis because the blowout is so fundamental to them. They have an extremely low threshold for pulling their players and a demonstrated willingness to play their guys high 30s minutes in games that stay close. And I think this game rates to stay close enough that – and I think, again, I probably should just be more prepared with this off the rip, but my sense is, let me just look this up. Okay, so our system actually does see this as a 7.5-point game, so basically hits it right on the nose. My sense is that this is the type of game, Brow is a high-profile enough player who's been on enough of a tear that Golden State doesn't take their foot off the gas, and that you can very comfortably project Durant, Thompson, and Curry for their full slate of minutes here.
Yep, and it's going to be interesting to see if this comes in as cash game plays. Like I said, 10,000 for Curry seems expensive. And then again, this guy is just still volume shooting. He was 10 for 18 from the field last night, 8 for 13 from three. Like he's really just not slowing down in terms of how well he's shooting from three and the scoring. Right. Thompson, obviously, I mean, he had a huge game last night, 13 for 19 from the field, only 5 for 8 for three. He has had a change a little bit in his game this year where he's taken a lot more mid-range shots. He took a lot, the percentage of shots that he's taken more that aren't threes has definitely increased this season as he's worked his game a little bit different. Now we've accounted for that for sure. But I think that especially considering like the guard, I know Drew Holiday's out there on the perimeter, but it's also Elfrid Payton out there on the perimeter. And so I think that we could see definitely another volume shooting game out of those two. And let's finish it off with the Pelican side. They're getting a little healthier. Like I said, with Payton coming back, Mirotić is back, though he's coming off the bench. Guys like Davis or Randall, are we just over? I mean, there's just a lot of guys that are expensive tonight. Between Harden, Giannis, Curry. I mean, I guess Durant kind of falls in there, but not really. We do run out of places to just the ability to play all these guys. Where does Davis rank for you among the most expensive plays? And I guess that would be like the Giannis Harden and Davis crowd. Like, do you have a sense of who you'd feel most comfortable playing in cash games based on their price points?
It's funny with Davis because on one hand, nothing has really fundamentally changed about his situation in New Orleans, except for the fact that, again, he's ripped off a few good games recently. And, I mean, he's young enough to where some amount of skill development is certainly in play. And I still just don't trust him as an 80 fan. This hopefully goes without saying. I don't trust him as an 80 fantasy points a game player. And that being said, his season totals are the highest of this group, right? He's averaging 63 fantasy points a game this season, which is a full 5 more than Harden. Like, that's right. A really, really significant difference. And so I actually think, all things being equal, he's probably the best fantasy player in a vacuum of this bunch. It's just that Harden has that increased opportunity that probably won't last for the whole season, but at least exists right now. And for that reason, I'm not sure I want to play any of these guys at 14,000, by the way. Right. So I'm not sure how much value I'm actually bringing here by ranking them. But Davis just brings his own host of concerns for me. So I would rather not play Davis against Golden State. He was actually just pretty insane against them in the playoffs last season. Right. And that was a pretty long sample size against the same roster. So, I think the floor is at least pretty reasonable. But again, I'm not going to bend over backwards to try to jam him in. I'm not going to feel like I'm out in the wind if Davis is a 60% start. And second time I used the out in the wind analogy today, by the way, not on top of my game necessarily. But I'm not going to feel like devastated if I see him as a 60% start on a 14K price tag, just because basically no one has any upside on that price.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we do see sometimes Davis's, at least on FanDuel, his ownership numbers probably trend a little higher than they should if he just played another position. I think that's mostly the thing on Davis, is that he just, or like if they just had him labeled as center instead of power forward, because power forward ends up being typically on a night-to-night basis, at least on FanDuel, a very just difficult proposition to try to figure out which two guys you want to play. And I think that ends up people just take the quote-unquote floor on Davis and overpay for him at times. And I think that actually does end up increasing his just overall ownership in a way that it wouldn't if he just was listed as small forward or something like that, and he was going toe-to-toe with Giannis in terms of like who you wanted to play. I think that positional concern is a real thing with Davis, where the ownership ends up being a lot higher on FanDuel than it does on, say, DraftKings, because on DraftKings you just have so much positional eligibility that you don't need to jam in two guys that FanDuel is just labeled to be power forwards. All right, anyway, we're going to get out of here. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com is the site. DFSR.com/deals will get you, the podcast listener, a free 7-day trial to our projection system with Optimal Lineups, powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. It's Optimal Lineups. It's FanDuel and DraftKings. Yahoo right around the corner. We're very close to releasing that if you play over on Yahoo. NFL for the final season of the divisional round, or final week of the divisional round games. Hockey, we're in. We have our DraftKings and FanDuel Optimal Lineups. So it's all covered in the one subscription package. You're not going to find a better deal anywhere else in the industry for everything that we're providing you. Free for 7 days and then just $29.95 a month, and you're all good to go. Buddy, talk to you again Friday when we roll through another slate of basketball. Enjoy your night in the NBA.
Will do.